Good afternoon, this is KTOO and I'm Clarice Larson. Thank you so much for tuning in. Juneau is getting a new City Hall location after all. Last night, the Juneau Assembly greenlit the purchase of two floors of the Michael J. Burns Building, which houses the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation downtown. It will become Juneau's new City Hall location after renovations. The Assembly's vote comes after multiple years of push and pull between city administration and Juneau voters. The city asked voters twice during recent municipal elections to approve bond debt to help pay for the construction of a brand new City Hall building. Voters said no both times. Since then, the city put enough money aside to purchase the floors in the Burns Building outright, which meant it didn't need to ask voters to approve any bond debt. The decision instead went to the Assembly. Juneau's current City Hall near Marine Park fits less than half of the city's employees, and it needs millions of dollars in repairs and maintenance. City administrators have long advocated for a new space that can house all its staff and city functions. Juneau resident Dave Hanna testified at the meeting last night ahead of the vote. He argues that there's other options that aren't being considered.
I really want you to do the math. The situation has changed a lot in Juneau. There are other opportunities lurking out there also.
The cost to purchase the floors is $10.2 million. Renovations could cost more than $7.5 million. Assemblymember Ella Atkinson and Neil Steininger were the only two members to vote against the plan. Assemblymember Wade Bryson championed the plan.
Buying the building that City Hall is in and CBJ owning our City Hall is the most fiscally responsible action that we can do.
The renovations and move to the new location are expected to take at least a year, according to city leaders. The final cost of renovations will be determined in the coming months. It's unclear what will happen to the current City Hall building. This is KTOO, and I'm Clarice Larson. Good afternoon. This is KTOO, and I'm Clarice Larson. Thank you so much for tuning in. Dozens of residents attended the Juneau Assembly meeting last night to protest the city's plan to evict all residents of the historic downtown Telephone Hill neighborhood in less than 2 weeks. The topic wasn't on the Assembly's agenda, but more than 20 residents testified at the meeting and held disapproving signs in the audience. Many people were also there to criticize the Juneau Assembly's general spending in recent years. Mendenhall Valley resident Don Hammond called the city's redevelopment plan for the neighborhood unacceptable.
I think this is a ridiculous proposal. I think it's offensive. I think it's a terrible thing to do to people that have lived in this community for a very long time.
All the people living on Telephone Hill are renters and have been since the state took ownership of the neighborhood in the 1980s. It was originally intended to be redeveloped to build a new Capitol complex there. That didn't pan out. The state transferred the land to the city in 2023. In 2024, the Assembly voted to redevelop the neighborhood and add more than 100 new housing units there in response to Juneau's ongoing housing crunch. This June, the Assembly approved spending roughly $5.5 million in city dollars, pulled from a few different sources, to fund the first phase of demolition and site preparation for the area. The total project cost is estimated at $9 million. They gave residents living there an October 1 deadline to move out. That's despite the city not having secured a developer to construct new housing there. The Assembly could have chosen to rescind the eviction notices sent to residents. It requires a two-thirds vote of approval. But Assembly members did not do that last night. Instead, multiple members, like Alicia Huskandes, shared why they stand behind their decision to evict Telephone Hill residents.
I love that neighborhood too, but I truly believe in my heart that to take a property that has a smaller number of houses on it and trade that for more dense housing is a right move for us for where we are in our housing crisis.
Demolition is slated to begin in December. City officials say they hope that a developer will begin construction as soon as next summer. And in August of 2015, a man died in Lemon Creek Correctional Center after staff denied him medical care. Now a decade later, his widow wonders if the state made any changes to prison protocol that would prevent a death like her husband's from happening again. KTOO's Yvonne Krumrie dug into that question and has more.
Tammy Jablonski Murphy said she had given up on the prospect of finding love before her first date with Joseph Murphy in the late 1990s.
But he kissed me and it was like, I'll marry you right now. I mean, that's how I felt in my heart. I thought, I can see me with you for the rest of my natural life.
Instead, their years together were cut short. Joseph Murphy died of a heart attack on August 14, 2015, in Juneau's Lemon Creek Correctional Center after guards refused him care. He was there on a protective custody hold. a type of hold intended to prevent someone from harming themselves or others while intoxicated. He wasn't charged with a crime. Jablonski Murphy says her late husband had a heart condition, but it was treatable, and he may not have died if he'd had access to his medications. She and Murphy's family sued the state for wrongful death and settled out of court. It's been 10 years, and Jablonski Murphy is still mourning. She wants to know if the state has changed its policies to prevent deaths like this in the future.
And I want to know what's changed, because if nothing has changed, I'm not laying my banner down, kid. I'm not.
A KTOO investigation shows that the state did make some initial changes, and the number of in-custody deaths decreased for a couple of years. But those changes were undone under Governor Mike Dunleavy. And it's been during his administration that the state has seen some of the highest numbers of deaths per year, peaking at 18 deaths in 2022. In the year leading up to Joseph Murphy's death, his widow said he had relapsed into drinking after years of being sober. He had quit drinking after leaving military service in Iraq a decade before, and he was becoming progressively more suicidal. Jablonski Murphy helped him try and seek care at Bartlett Regional Hospital and other treatment facilities without success, and it culminated in the sequence of events leading to his death under a protective custody hold in prison.
He went to treatment. He was at the hospital. They sent him to the jail. It just kept going. And I was watching him fall through every crack you can imagine.
One night in August, he told her she would be better off without him. She was afraid that if she fell asleep, he would hurt himself. So she took him to Bartlett Regional Hospital. Staff there said he had to go to Lemon Creek Correctional Center. He wasn't being charged with a crime. He was held on a protective hold, which is intended to prevent people who are intoxicated from hurting themselves or others. Jablonski Murphy said she tried to insist the officers let Murphy take his heart medication with him, but they wouldn't allow it. Instead, the officer said they would call 911 if anything happened. Murphy died the next morning. And by the time he died, 25 people had died in Alaska Department of Corrections facilities in the preceding years. That prompted then-Governor Bill Walker to order an investigation of the department, even prior to Murphy's death. The investigation's findings were released in a report in November of that year, and they were scathing. The report included an analysis of how Murphy died. It said that video footage from the prison showed guards dismissing Murphy's repeated calls for help. Emergency medical services were called when a different staff member found him unresponsive on the floor. By then, it was too late. Murphy died of a heart attack. Dean Williams, then Special Assistant to Governor Walker, spearheaded the investigation. Williams said staff exhibited a blatant lack of concern for Murphy's well-being.
But they handled Mr. Murphy in a horrible way, in a cruel and callous way. The man was having a heart attack in front of everyone, and nobody called 911.
He took over as DOC commissioner from 2016 to 2018. He created an internal investigation system for Alaska's Department of Corrections, a change to prevent more deaths like Murphy's, he said.
The death of Mr. Murphy shocks our conscience, and it should, right? But that was not the only one.
He says internal affairs units can thoroughly investigate deaths and find ways the system failed and can improve, instead of sweeping custody deaths under the rug.
That's why you have internal affairs. It's not a luxury. It's an essential component, which is why every other state has it.
But Alaska's next DOC commissioner, Nancy Dahlstrom, under Governor Mike Dunleavy, dismantled the internal investigations unit in 2018. Legislators said the cut would save the state money. Alaska DOC hasn't had internal investigations since. The department spokesperson said there are no plans to resurrect it. Alaska state troopers investigate DOC deaths. KTOO could confirm only that most states do have internal affairs units. But the director of the Prison and Jail Innovation Lab in Texas said Williams was right. Alaska's the only state she knows of that doesn't. In recent years, deaths in Department of Corrections custody have garnered public outcry in multiple lawsuits from the ACLU. Tammy Jablonski Murphy says the pain of losing her husband is still with her. She's 66 years old, and she's a social worker. She helps people recovering from addiction and people reentering the community after incarceration. She says her work is a tribute to Murphy.
And if I can help, and it sounds cliche, if I can help one person crawl through this fractured, broken system and come out the other end and be able to claim their life back and start over, get their families back, whatever they need to do, then that honors my Joe. And that's what I'm all about.
She doesn't plan to retire anytime soon, and she doesn't plan to let go of the memory of her husband, no matter how many years it's been. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Cremery.
And state prosecutors will retry the sexual assault case against a former Juno chiropractor facing 13 charges. They stated their intentions to move forward at a hearing today. Prosecutor Kristen Tendy said the details of how many charges will be retried are still being determined. It's been nearly 3 weeks since the sexual assault trial against a former Juno chiropractor ended with 2 acquittals and 14 charges declared mistrial. Last week, the judge in the case dismissed one of those charges. That means, though Jeffrey Fultz wasn't found guilty, the remaining 13 charges are still active. Those are the charges the state may retry. More than a dozen former patients have accused Jeffrey Fultz of sexual assault under the guise of medical care between 2014 and 2020, while he worked at Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium in Juneau. At a hearing today, Fultz's attorney said they're withdrawing from the case. A representation hearing to determine Fultz's future legal representation is scheduled for September 30th at noon. And Democrats and independents in Alaska State Legislature are urging Congress to preserve federal funding for science and research. In a letter sent Friday, 14 lawmakers urged the state's all-Republican congressional delegation to oppose cuts that President Trump proposed in his 2026 budget. Fairbanks Democratic Representative Ashley Carrick wrote the letter asking the delegation to resist cuts to NASA, the National Science Foundation, and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. She says cuts to federal funding would undermine research on everything from Arctic health to drones. Trump's budget would slash funding for basic scientific research by roughly a third. That's according to the American Association for the Advancement of Science, an advocacy group. But a president's budget is just a proposal. Congress decides what to spend money on when it passes appropriation bills, and the House and Senate have yet to agree on a spending bill that would fund agencies like NASA and NOAA for the next year. The appropriations committees have shown little appetite for the deep cuts to scientific agencies Trump has proposed. For now, Republicans and Democrats in Congress are currently at loggerheads over a short-term spending bill to avert an impending government shutdown. This is KTOO. Thank you so much for tuning in.